Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Day 15 of World Cup 2018 is done. Brian Strauss and I will be talking about that as part of our podcast coming to you daily from Russia through July 16th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. In this episode, I'm also joined by Clarence Seedorf, the only player ever to win the Men's UEFA Champions League with three different teams. He's working for Fox Sports and other global outlets during World Cup. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss from his Moscow hotel. I'm here at the Fox lot in Red Square. Brian, how are you doing?
I've spent the entire day in my room, man.
That's awesome. You need to do that from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, I had things I thought I might do today or places I thought I might go, and after whatever it's been 18 days, we got to the point where it was like 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and I was... It's like, screw it. I can't.
I hear you, so, man.
So I watched games and wrote a little bit on the bracket and studied permutations. And that's it, man. I got my laundry delivered. I have my laundry done.
Yeah,
I
got some laundry done, too. I slept from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. local time. First time I've gotten 8 hours since I got here.
Good for you.
But still a full work day with the last set of group finales. And every day of the 4 days of these group finales, we've had at least one dramatic finish. And once again, we did today, involving Japan, Senegal, and Colombia. Colombia and Japan end up advancing. Senegal is out. And in an unprecedented moment in World Cup history... the tiebreaker used to determine Senegal being out instead of Japan is FIFA fair play points, which, if I'm being honest, I had never thought about until today.
I think it's like driver's license points. I guess maybe Senegal's bus ran a stop sign on the way to the stadium, so they're going home. I may be wrong on this, and for those of you who think that, I guess no one could listen to this and possibly think we rehearse, but just in case anyone out there imagines that we rehearse, we don't.
Run through a brick wall!
I think when Canada won their only Gold Cup title in 2000, I think it was, I think they advanced on lots.
Oh, really?
I think that's the only... Yeah, I think they got out of the group stage by the drawing of lots. And I don't even know what that means. I don't know what a lot is, but they draw them. And I assume that means, like, picking instead of pen and paper. But they draw something called a lot. And Canada went on to win the Gold Cup. And that's the only time I know of that something like that has happened. But then FIFA introduced this other... The driver's license thing, and Senegal is out. Which is kind of a bummer, because they were kind of fun to watch, but they're gone.
My suggestion, or at least guess, instead of drawing lots, that meant that Chuck Blazer basically just decided who advanced in the Gold Cup. The same way they actually come up with the groups for the Gold Cup. But it's kind of crazy when you think about it. I'm trying to imagine what fans of any team, what would go through their mind if that's how your team went out. And so I spent the rest of the day trying to think of better ways to break a tie, and came up with either shots on goal for the group or expected goals if you want to placate the data wonks.
Well, so I actually mentioned this on Twitter and had a couple of people get back to me. Man, it's especially road warrior-y out there right now.
It is. It's like this every night, as you know.
So I mentioned this on Twitter, and a couple of people got back to me and said that there was something to it. I have a memory of many, many years ago My father grew up in New Jersey, and he was not a soccer. He played tennis and basketball. He was not a soccer player, but he liked the sport, and he would go see his high school team play and had some friends on the team and stuff like that. Soccer being sort of relevant in New Jersey way back when, as we know. And I remember having a conversation with him a very long time ago and him telling me that they used to count corner kicks.
Right.
This was before penalty shootouts existed. You know, my dad was in high school in the early 60s, and they would count corner kicks in like a tournament game and like the state playoffs where someone had to move on. The reasoning being that the team that had more corners probably was on the attack more, probably produced more offense, probably therefore was the better team. And that was an easy, non-arbitrary, quantitative way to determine the team that advanced. So you could count corner kicks through the group stage and have it be a thing. So to me, that would be more satisfying and perhaps more indicative of what went on the field than yellow cards. Because they give yellow cards for all kinds of shit. They give yellow cards if you take your shirt off or if you, you know, whatever. So, yeah, it's unsatisfying.
I mean, the only thing I would say, I like corner kicks better than fair play points. But I also could imagine a scenario where if teams know this, them trying to furiously at the end of the game win corners, which would be hilarious, but
it would be hilarious,
but kind of ridiculous.
But it would, right? But is it more ridiculous than what Japan and Poland did in the last 10 minutes of their game?
Yeah, that was bad. It's a good question. I always root for chaos if it's not my team involved,
right?
And so I think a coin flip would have been an interesting thing. I would have loved to have seen like a public coin flip, kind of like in Friday Night Lights.
Red Square.
Yeah, exactly. You know, who would do the flip? Would it be Johnny Infantino? What kind of coin would they use? I'm sure this has all been thought out, I hope.
It's clearly Diego, man. Come on. Come on. That's a slam dunk.
But in the other group, you've got, we already knew that England and Belgium were through. The question right. was, would anyone try and win that game? Belgium, apparently nobody told Adnan Januzaj not to act.
They celebrated. They celebrated the goal. It was a really nice goal. Really nice bending shot. And Belgium seemed pretty happy about it. I guess it's instinctive, right? You see a really nice goal and you get fired up. So.
Well, Herm Edwards, I got a Herm Edwards gif on my Twitter feed today saying, you play to win the game. And that's what Belgium did. They're on 9 points. They get Japan in the round of 16, but they also get in the more difficult side of the bracket. But I like Belgium's confidence. I mean, you get the sense that their feeling is, look, if you're going to win the World Cup, you're going to have to beat some tough teams, so we might as well do that.
Yeah, and so England has the... You know, England has the tougher round of 16 game against Colombia. And then if they do get through that, then maybe perhaps lighter work in the quarterfinal than Belgium will have going up against Brazil or Mexico. But Gareth Southgate had a good quote. He just said, look, we haven't won a knockout game since 2006. Like, I'm not going to sit here and start plotting my route to the semis. That was ridiculous. No, the left side of the bracket is absurd. I counted this up. I just sent a story in sort of on the imbalance. I thought this was an interesting stat. So if you take the three kinds of trophies senior national teams can win.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Keep going, my man. I feel like I'm in an episode of Cops Moscow here.
Seriously. It's like the ambulance is on its way somewhere in a hurry and also has indigestion. So if you take the three types of titles a national team can win, the World Cup, the Confederations Cup, and their Continental Championship. So I counted up looking at the pedigree, looking at the tournament-tested tradition of both sides of the bracket. The left side of the bracket has 72 such titles among the eight teams. The right side has 9. And then you look at the star power on the left side of the bracket. The last time a player on the right side of the bracket finished in the top three for FIFA Player of the Year voting was Andres Iniesta in 2012. It's been 6 years. And obviously on the left side, in addition to, you know, the obvious Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar, Suarez, I mean, you've got France, you've got Brazil, you've got Belgium. I mean, it's just incredibly loaded. And one team is gonna come out of that, and it could be any one of like six teams, and they are gonna either be completely spent and bloodied and exhausted, or they are gonna be on such a roll and riding so high that they will be unbeatable. And it's 50-50 for me, which one it'll be.
Well, I would say this, and this came originally, this idea from 538, of the idea of having a draw of opponents for the round of 16 after the group stage is done, so that you're not incentivizing teams to finish second in their group. Mm-hmm. The one thing I would say, though, is that would cause problems with the rest day schedule.
Yeah, it would destroy the rhythm of the tournament. You'd have some team going 10 days without a game, another team playing their round of 16 game 2 days later. I just don't see, logistically, I don't see how you can get that done.
My only question, though, would be, what if you just did draws with, like, teams group A to D and groups E to H? Would it be possible if you added, you know, if you gave a little bit of variability to the situation so that there wouldn't be as many extremes in the rest days, and you added a couple of days to the tournament, could you potentially pull it off?
Yeah, I'm sure if we sat down, or people even much smarter than us sat down and figured that out. Yeah, if you staggered it somehow so there was at least some accounting for rest days and rhythm, maybe you could do it. But again, it's all also sort of moot, because at most there's one more World Cup played under this format.
True.
And so, you know, maybe you could figure that out for 2022, or just screw it and have 200 teams in the World Cup. Whatever. I guess there are, in a sense, right? 211 teams officially entered the World Cup this time around, and we're down to 16, and that's kind of cool. And so, yeah, most of the good teams left are on the left side of the bracket, but it's going to be riveting stuff. I mean, the fact that it starts off with Argentina versus France, that's a World Cup final, you know, being played in the round of 16. I will be going to, and the lottery was also for me, waiting to see which games I'd be going to. So I will be covering live the Spain-Russia game.
Nice.
And I will be at England-Colombia.
Okay, where's that?
That is at Sparta.
Okay, so both in Moscow. Okay, well, good stuff, man. That means that I get to see you in Moscow for a few more days.
Yep.
Let's call it a night, because I have to jump on the Fox show, but always good to talk to you, my friend.
All right. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Okay, let's do it.
Later.
See ya. Big thanks to Brian Strauss. Next up is my interview with Clarence Seedorf. Our guest today is Clarence Seedorf, who's working as an analyst for Fox Sports and other global outlets here in Russia at the Men's World Cup. He's the only player ever to win the Men's UEFA Champions League with three different clubs, which he did four times total with Ajax, Real Madrid, and AC Milan. And he reached the 1998 World Cup semifinals with the Netherlands. He has also coached at AC Milan and Deportivo La Coruña, among other places. Clarence, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
Great to have you here, and it's been really nice getting to know you a little bit, working with you for Fox throughout the tournament. Lots of stuff to talk about here. I appreciate the time. I would start by asking you about this World Cup. What are your thoughts so far on this World Cup? The biggest surprise is defending champion Germany going out in the group stage. In your opinion, what went wrong for Germany?
Well, Germany came in, of course, as one of the favorites of this tournament, being still, you know, the World Cup champions at the moment. But it was obvious after the first match that something wasn't really functioning. And I think it was especially the defensive mentality, the patience, the German being cold and calculating, you know, their moments. And I didn't see all of that. They weren't playing that bad with the ball, even if their choices were really poor in the last third, going a lot centrally against Mexico, giving them all the time counter-attack possibilities and exposing their defense, playing that way. They adjusted that in the second match. They played the German way through the sides, getting a lot of balls in the box. But you also could see that they had an issue with, you know, scoring, which is also synonymous of how you are psychologically as a team. things were not flowing. So they were also a bit unlucky in that. But that has to do, in my opinion, with the lack of the proper mentality when they didn't have the ball, or let's say the way they were attacking again, with a proper mindset. And the proper mindset is when you attack, you're always aware of if you lose the ball, you know, what will happen. And then you try to anticipate that with your defense, with your midfielders. That has been the biggest issue for me for this Germany. And then they come in the last match when, in the last, I would say, 30 minutes in the second match, they played on a super high level offensively. And for me, that was difficult to even improve on that. Mm-hmm. Scoring in that last minute in extra time with Kroos. But from a from a nervous point of view, from a psychological point of view, they gave so much in that second match that I saw them with less energy in the last match. He took out Ozil and Khedira for the second match. They came on again in the third match. And it was even worse than the first match they played. So, was Leuven still capable of having the effect on this group, you know, at the end? I'm sure everybody thought so. But that's I think, an interesting discussion point.
Recently, Yogi Löw had signed a contract extension with Germany. Do you think he will remain their coach, or do you not?
Well, I mean, for me, he can remain definitely, because it's not because he didn't perform in these three matches that he's now a bad coach. It's not absolutely not about that, but maybe he also underestimated or miscalculated his capability of still getting this team, you know, in the right place to perform at their best. So maybe he will reconsider to continue, which I would understand, and maybe have also another adventure. But on the other hand, if they will continue with him, I understand that also perfectly. You know, Germans have had have done some great planning over the last 10, 12 years. And if they planned with him to go another 4 years, then it would also be logical to continue that, because it's not because of these three matches something has changed in his capability of everything. But maybe the response of what they've seen from the players, he himself, I could understand that he may have some doubts now if he's the right guy to get them to the next stage.
Okay. Which teams have impressed you the most so far in this World Cup, and why?
I think there are two teams, really. Belgium is one of them. The other one is Croatia. Mm-hmm. England, for me, I still want to see them tested properly. Even if you still have to perform, even against the smaller teams, because, right. I mean, Argentina struggled against Iceland and etc. So, but the way they were playing, have played until now, Belgium, yeah, good football, vertical speed, goals, quality. I've seen a bit of everything there. Which is good, and not even on a too high level. So for me, there's still margin to improve, even for them, especially when they will get better opponents, of course. And Croatia, I'm worried about the level they reached already. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's that much stretch, you know, for them. But they have a great team, great players, and they performed in the group outstandingly. And yeah, I mean, they not a big surprise. Even Belgium is not a big surprise, but because of the players they have on the team. But these are the two teams that have given me, that I said, yes, these are teams that at this point have played the best football.
Okay, good stuff. Which teams do you expect more from at this point than what we have seen so far?
Well, Argentina.
Yeah.
France. I think these are the two big names. Brazil has performed properly, not underperforming, not overperforming. I think it was gradually improving. France has been underperforming, in my opinion, getting results, but underperforming. And Argentina obviously has been underperforming as well, big time. But they came back with good spirit in the last match, which gives us hope that they will improve and also have taken away a little of that pressure, you know, that was on them. So yeah, these are the two teams that I would say they have really, besides Germany, of course,
right.
But we have discussed that already. So, but the ones who are still in, I think that these are the two.
Okay. Just today, we have seen Senegal go out on the fair play points tiebreaker for the first time in the history of the World Cup. Japan goes through, Senegal goes out. Are you okay with using fair play points as a tiebreaker?
I mean, we have to be okay. If there was a better solution, I think somebody would have proposed it already. I don't know. What can you do?
Other options? I mean, I've seen a few things thrown out. Number of corner kicks earned, potentially. One of the complaints, which I find interesting, there was an article in the Washington Post this afternoon about this, is that this sort of unconscious idea of referees, I don't have the data in front of me if African teams are given more yellow cards than non-African teams, or if there's something going on subconsciously in the heads of referees that might have an impact on that.
Yeah, I mean, now that we're talking, it could be that how many shots on goal could be something. The fair play, of course, we get into other stuff that is related to a third person or third entity, like the referee, as you say. But the shots on goal depends on how you play. And so, yeah, I mean, but I think it's evolution. I think everything needs also to be tested. And everybody knew about this rule before. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But for sure, we can try to find things that are more related to what the teams control.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I agree with you on that. I think that's that could be. I never thought about it, but now that I'm putting my head around it, I think it would be interesting also to favor, you know, more attacking football. To say, okay, if all the shots on goal that really had hit the target will be counted, and that could be making a difference. Absolutely.
Yeah, I never thought about this until today either. So I guess you never know what might happen at a World Cup. Senegal was pretty good in this tournament, even though they're out now. Senegal is the only team of the 32 in Russia that has a black coach, Aliou Cissé. Why are we not seeing more black coaches in the World Cup, whether it's African teams or teams from other continents? Why aren't we seeing more black coaches in European club football?
Well, I think that there's still a lot of prejudice going on, and I don't really think it's only an issue of football. I think football is a mirror of society, I always say. And well, we see that in society there's a lot of movement going on to give a voice to the minorities, groups of minorities, and yeah, racism, discrimination, prejudice, the different steps within it. Not everything is related to racism, but for sure there is a difference in the opportunities that are provided to black coaches. If you look at the percentages, for example, even in England or in France, you know, where there are a lot of black players who then did their courses and just don't find the same opportunity. So I think that process, you know, needs to be talked about, needs to be openly discussed, and we should improve upon that for sure. It goes from both sides. Also from the other side, you know, those black coaches that get a chance and have their opportunity need to perform, need to know that they have a responsibility also for a whole movement, you know, to make a change and to make sure that who's giving the jobs have the best perception possible about our capability. I think that a lot has to do with, you know, history. You know, the quarterbacks, you know, how would you call it, syndrome, or that black athletes are not thinkers, and that we can see relate back also a bit in football, where you know, if you go in the history of football, the number 10s that are a little bit like the quarterbacks or, you know, the playmaker, how many black playmakers have we seen, you know, over all these years? It's changing. So I'm very positive about that there's change in movement at this moment, but it needs to be reinforced. It needs to be more visible. And again, it's from both sides. It's not only those who give the job, but also the ones who are looking for it, and make sure you're prepared in the best way. Study, you know, get your management courses done, and try to be the best. And it's not about, you know, what I think, I like the whole NFL Rooney Rule.
Yeah. It requires minority interview exactly. ease for and coaching jobs.
Which the thing, what I like so much about it was the fact that they didn't oblige them to hire them, but it was really, you have to interview them because it's about a prejudice. I'm convinced that the prejudice is the first step that we can still influence those who have those type of thoughts. When you get already in a situation where discrimination is part of the thought, it's already was harder. And then eventually, if you have a racist, then it's even harder. So the more we can educate those who have a thought that is based on perception and based on prejudice, we definitely can influence that by sitting in front and talking with potential coaches. Now, what is the difference? The American culture, to hire somebody, they have job interviews. In football, it's about an agent or a friend or somebody else who says that this could be a good coach, and most of the time they're not even interviewed, and they're signed for whatever time they sign for. So the processes in football are different, and I think that's something that we should actually try to change and make sure that each club on professional level, especially the highest level, have to show their process mm-hmm. of hiring somebody. And that would also probably improve their choices, because many times they make choices and after 3 months they already change their mind because they lost four out of six games or whatever, which can happen. I remember a year where I think it was Juventus. They lost, I think, five out of the first eight matches or something like that, and they kept, of course, the coach, and they won at the end of the league. I mean, mm-hmm. So, but in football, we see a lot of emotional reactions, and this whole interview process to hire a coach, I think that is implemented in a more systematic way in football, it would also give us a chance then to get into such process or say, okay, if you have three interviews, make sure, or you have to also interview a minority group, and that would be something that could help improve this situation as well.
As I'm sure you know, we have plenty of race issues in the United States. They've been that way for a long time. However, in U.S. sports, I do find that we often see sometimes European football in the amount of racism that is just in your face from fans, especially in certain countries, and we're surprised by that.
Yeah.
What, in your opinion, needs to be done about racism, and especially in European football, and why do you think it's still a big problem?
It's racist behavior. Racism is, for me, something that we need to define properly. When we have a group of 10, 20, or a small group that have a certain behavior, I call it racist behavior. Now, okay. We don't know if they're racist, but because the are players that I played with that were booed, they weren't black, were Italian guys, but they had a certain behavior, were not liked by the others, and they would try to find a way to get to them. And it was, of course, not with the sounds they would make for a black player, but they would maybe have songs about his mom or try to offend him. So I think we cannot... we should really be careful using that proper word. But if we want to talk about the behavior of such group and how it needs to be punished, well, I think that for sure there needs to be taken action, and not only in terms of fines, because I don't think the fine will at the end help, because the fines have been going on for years and years, and still we are seeing this type of behavior. Today, there's technology. We can identify the people who are in on the stands, and for me, they should be banned forever, and that's it. We had the hooligans going on, and today the Premier League is the best football league in the world as a fan to go to. Mm-hmm. So authorities need to step up. I think the rules in terms of when these type of things happen, to really identify and make that effort, and to really have these people abandoned from football, because they are no fans. These are people making problems, and that's it. It's either for violence or it's for racist behavior, or and then a lot of times they are blaming the clubs. The clubs are getting fined and everything. I don't know the effect of that. No.
Okay. Interesting discussion there. Switching gears, you've coached at AC Milan and more recently at Deportivo La Coruña, among other clubs. What kind of football do you like your teams to play?
Can I go back to the question before?
Yeah.
Because I just reminded that we've been talking only about the coaching position, but in the coaching position, they don't do the interviews, but for management jobs, sport directors, yeah, or marketing director or whatever within the world of football, in management institutions of football, the percentage is even lower.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy that what is the movement also here in FIFA, for example, of trying to make it a more inclusive and more diverse, mm-hmm, institution, which should happen in all the federations as well. That's a point that can be immediately applied, mm-hmm, the Rooney Rule, because then it's more common for such positions to have a job interview.
Yeah,
they don't hire a marketing manager just because they've heard somebody's good. Normally, you really have a proper job interview, and I think that could be something that could be applied immediately in order to increase, the possibility to have a more diverse federation, Italian, Spanish, whatever, Dutch.
Yeah,
yeah. So I just wanted to add it.
No, and I appreciate that. It's always a slightly awkward transition when you're talking about a really serious, important topic like race in sports, and then moving on to on the field, which, mm-hmm, is also important, obviously, but it's just always going to be a jarring transition.
But absolutely, absolutely. And we need to appreciate that it's life, you know, and it's a battle of all. We all try to improve. I mean, there are a lot of good people out there, and I think we should have faith in that things will improve. And it's great that you are giving the opportunity also to just, you know, be able to express upon these type of topics, which is important, and that we can talk about it without anger, you know, which is also important. And I'm sure that things will improve. I'm sure that we all have a common interest for it to improve. And if I look at how I want to manage players, it's related also to how I would like to see society go. And it should be a more personal approach. It should be based on quality and merits. And these are a few of my core pillars which I work on with my groups that I've had until now. making them feel all important, putting more hours in terms of that type of relationship to have conversation with them, to understand, you know, who they are as a person. For me, before the athlete, they are persons. And once I know the person better, I can also understand the athlete better. Nobody performs well if he doesn't feel good. And if somebody doesn't feel good because of issues not related to football, related to personal life or anything outside of his job, then it's a great thing that there's a relationship going on where this athlete feels comfortable to eventually share with not directly myself necessarily, but also my staff, understand the type of way of working, this philosophy, to care about your players and to care about their well-being on and off the field, and then to work technically with them to improve their ability, their capability, their technical capability, give them tools in order to do so, challenge them. When you work with the best players, then it's really about challenging them, and they will find a way, and they will find, you know, the topics which they want to work on. And those who are not the best generally are more eager to improve on stuff, but sometimes don't know how. So then you provide them the tools and the time also to do it. So to make it really in a nutshell, I focus on the individual growth in order to make the team stronger. That's for me fundamental, and that's from the mental aspect, which is for me super important. Physical and technical, of course. The whole idea of using that data, technology, applied sport technology, in order to make, you know, less mistakes and better a better plan for the team to grow. These are all aspects that I've used as a player as well, and now finally as a coach I can even do more with it, because I really believe in such system.
We're nearing the end here. I appreciate you taking this much time. The other night we were eating together and we talked a bit about soccer in America. I know you've observed soccer in America a fair amount. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I'm looking so much forward for America to explode and to really get to a level where it can compete to attract players also in the early stages of their career. Because it has it all. I think it's a great sporting environment. There's a sporting mentality. The facilities are great. Fan base has grown enormously. I do think that the basis of such movement in order to provide young talents for professional football is still not where it should be. I'm a bit disappointed about that, because I think that the potential was there to do it maybe even 10 years ago. Other things have grown, other aspects have grown, but I think that there's missing a long-term plan to get into the grassroots and to get into youth systems in a way that it will provide constantly athletes on top level, because I cannot imagine that with the physical and mental potential that there is here and the sport mentality that there is in the United States, that it can provide 30 top players that are maybe a few of them, 10 of them maybe playing in Europe or whatever, but that really can boost the level of the national team on a constant level, because it's how many people are living in the States? 200 million, what is it?
More than 300 million.
Here we go. I mean, shouldn't be an issue, right?
Right.
In terms of numbers. So I think that the system that is in place has brought football where it is now. But there definitely needs to be a different approach in order also to really trigger at the right moment in the growth of the youngsters the proper processes. And if that's going to happen, then really America for me will be like one of the top teams potentially when it comes to World Cups and stuff. Just from a physical point of view.
Okay. Interesting.
And the technical point of view, and the tactical point of view, are all things that we can learn.
Yeah.
And there is talent, raw talent out there. So, well, let's see.
Yeah. I mean, in your career, you've played in a lot of different countries. You've coached in different countries. What would you like to do next, coaching-wise?
No, I'm looking for nice projects. I'm looking for projects that have, that's challenging, and that goes in the direction of the things that we have discussed, that embraces all of those pieces, that I can really express that in the project. I like to create a team around me. I like to collaborate and leave always a legacy wherever I go. I did this as a player, and I'd have to say that even in my experience as a coach, everywhere I've been, I left something behind which was positive, what the club could use eventually and build upon, further upon. So it's about a project, it's about the people, it's about the vision of the club and the people who are managing the club and adding that value to them.
Clarence Seedorf, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss and Clarence Seedorf, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help the cause if you do. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.